Good morning again. I'm going to hand out something that we're going to do together as a church, and I'm not sure that we'll get through all of it this morning, and I'm hoping there's enough for everyone. If there's not, sing out and there might be some spares. Perhaps we can share. If not, I'd encourage you to wrestle with some of these questions perhaps in the fellowship time this morning. Or perhaps even in your life groups or house churches during the week. I also, one of the things I forgot to mention this morning, obviously Kerry is not here. She sends her greetings. She's on a ministry free weekend, and she is enjoying a nice rest and a break. So please pray for her. She has had the wonderful privilege of being able to get away and just recoup for the last quarter and run home, which will be big for her. I had the privilege last year of going to the United States, and I lived in Atlanta for 4 months. One of the things that I got to do is one of those American kind of pastimes was I got to go to a high school and college football game. And here we have the cheerleaders in all of their glory. They had a routine for just about every single play. And then there was always the star quarterback that always was able to strike the most appropriate pose whenever a camera was put in front of him. And then here we have the coach, and they would huddle around the coach, and the question always, what's the play? So I don't know if you know too much about American football, but the way that it works is one side is moving up the field, and there are certain kind of markers along the field indicating a certain kind of progression as you get closer to scoring a touchdown. You want to get the ball into the end zone. And at each time, in between each play, it's not like football, which is quite free-flowing in American football. At each kind of stoppage, they all huddle again and they work out what's the play. The question that they would always ask is, what's the play? So they would huddle back and the coach would tell them what the play is, or the quarterback would, once you kind of move up in the ranks, the quarterback would dictate the play. And these are practiced things that they had practiced and were ready to go with into the game. So they might say play 43 or play 42 or let's do the offensive move. And of course I know absolutely nothing. But you would hear them yell out, what's the play? And this morning that's my question that I want us to wrestle with. What's the play? We've been going through the Bible and we've been looking at a year in God's big story. And the theme of the last couple of weeks, if you've been with us, is the exile. And so a couple of weeks ago we preached about the idea that we find ourselves in a time of exile. And the analogy here is that in Australia, we at the moment are finding ourselves in a time and a place and a space where our culture has largely rejected Christianity and rejected the message of the church, and we find ourselves on the outer of that. And what does that look like? This is a new space for us. We haven't been here. We use the term post-secular to describe kind of where we're at. And then the last couple of weeks, Kerry spoke about what it looks like to lament in the exile and looking to the hope in that space and the sadness of what we've lost, but looking towards where we're going. So today what I want us to talk about is how do we respond when we find ourselves in that space of exile? What's the play? That's my question. And we're in the book of Daniel this morning. We'll be looking at the life of Daniel. And we often read this as a hero story, don't we? We read this as a story about Daniel, and you'd be mistaken for thinking that Daniel is actually the main character of this book. The book of Daniel is actually the story of how God fulfilled his promise to bless the world through his people in spite of his people. The book of Daniel is the vision of how God brought his kingdom into this world even when there wasn't a homeland to do it from. And so if you know a little bit about Daniel, what you know is that he was part of the first group of people that were carted off to Babylon. And the first time that the Babylonians came to Jerusalem, they took the nobility and the royal class, the artisans, the workers. This is the top tier, cream of the crop of the people of Judah, and they carted them back to Babylon. And Daniel is one of those people. We know and we think that Daniel was a young man at that time because he received re-education, cultural re-education. That's a term that we would probably not be very fond with and not be very very pleased about if that was to happen. But basically, he was given training in divination and dream telling and what it means to discern spirits. And these are things that probably make us deeply uncomfortable that a man of God is actually receiving this training in more or less the pagan arts. This is what's going on. And as a young man, we think that for most of the people that served the royal court, as Daniel did, they were actually castrated. And so the eunuch that is in charge, the chief eunuch who is in charge of Daniel, is a eunuch. And the expectation is that it's likely that Daniel also suffered greatly in that space. He was given a new name. His name was "The Lord is my strength," and he was given the name Belshazzar, which means "Bel is God." So the god of this land is the God. He was given a new language that he had to learn. He was given new practices that he had to participate in, and he was given a new religion that was the cultural dominant force. And so at this time for Daniel, there's a tension for the people of Israel in this space over integration versus separation. Do we make ourselves a part of this community, or do we go off and do we make our own little space outside of the community? The question is, how do we live in a city? The question is, what's the play? I'm going to read to you this morning from Jeremiah 29. And the context of this passage is that there is another prophet that has been speaking to the people in exile, and he's been saying, don't integrate. This is not going to take a long time. You're going to be back in Judah before you know it. Don't worry about it. Don't bother about it. This isn't going to last very long. And Jeremiah says, no, that's not the case. And in verse 4, he sends a letter to the exiles in Jeremiah 29. He says this is what the Lord Almighty, the God of Israel, says to all of those I carried into exile from Jerusalem to Babylon. Build houses and settle down. Plant gardens and eat what they produce. Marry and have sons and daughters. Find wives for your sons and give your daughters in marriage so that they too may have sons and daughters. Increase in number there, do not decrease. Also, seek the peace and prosperity of the city to which I have carried you into exile. Pray to the Lord for it, because if it prospers, you too will prosper. It's very interesting that in that same passage in Jeremiah 29, there's that often quoted verse from verse 11. I know the plans that I have for you, declares the Lord. Plans for good, plans to give you a hope and a future. What I find rather ironic about that is that God's plan for a hope and a future is actually to send his people into exile. Hold that tension this morning. Isn't that interesting? God's plan for peace and prosperity for his people is actually in that space where they're in that foreign land. So the question is, what's the play? What do we do when we find ourselves as a minority or a rejected culture as a people of God living in the city? Daniel is an avid reader of the scroll of Jeremiah. This is the game plan. He goes, this is what it means to live in exile, and he puts this into action. So he firstly accepts that he knows that this isn't going to be a short-term thing. It's not a blimp. He doesn't resist with it, but rather he works with it. He works with God. And through God, Daniel becomes one of Babylon's most important advisors. He gains the trust of the king. The king has a dream. The king doesn't know how to interpret the dream. So he invites all of the scribes to come and he says, tell me the dream that I've had. And they go, no one can do that. No one can tell you the dream that you've had. Why don't you tell us the dream and we'll interpret it for you? And he goes, no, hang on a second. I'm fairly sure that you don't know your stuff. Tell me the dream I've had. If you claim to have access to the divine, tell me the dream that I've had. And if you don't, I'm going to kill you all. And they're freaking out right now. And Daniel goes off and prays. It's really fascinating how, if you look at the life of the prophets and the people of the exiles, how often prayer is at the center of their life. how often we find Daniel praying. I just want to throw that out as a side little thing this morning. But Daniel goes off and prays. And in that space, he receives divine revelation about what this dream actually means. And he comes before the king and he says, no one can tell you what your dream has. But I'm going to tell you, there is a God of the heaven and the universe who has given you this dream. And he has given it to me to understand. And he goes forth and he describes the dream. And for Nebuchadnezzar, it's this watershed moment of going, whoa, there is something beyond. There is actually a God. And so through that, Daniel receives a respect, because he's not only saved the entire advising class of Babylon from certain death, but he has also become the trusted ear to the king. And he uses his position of influence to bless the city. He uses the points of difference as opportunities for God to shine. He takes the opportunity to be in that space, to be God's person in that marketplace. Takes the opportunity to be raised up in leaders, raised up as a leader in a way that we would probably say is quite unconventional and maybe even a little bit uncomfortable. And he uses that to shape for good the place that he serves. Folks, I've met some people that say this at the moment. I don't know whether you've heard this as well. Some people I know, they say this. I don't know that we should have kids. The world is just so bad. It's just not worth bringing kids into the world. Have you met people like this? Or I've met some pastors that have said this. Look, I'm really only interested in preaching and serving and ministering to my congregation and my church. I don't really. What we need to do is we need to serve these people, not serve the city. And I've met some followers of Jesus. I don't know whether you've met some of these people who live their lives in that kind of Christian bubble. They go to a Christian school, they study at Tabor, and then they marry someone from church, and then they work for a Christian organization, and then they repeat the process again. And their kids, they go to a Christian school, and then they go study at Tabor, and then they marry someone who they met at Tabor, and then they marry, and then they work for a Christian, and then they have kids. And it's this kind of cycle that goes around. I don't know, have you met these people? That's not the play. That's not the play in our time and our environment. Rather, just like Daniel, we're the artisan class here, especially in this church. Think about it. We've got singers, we've got artists, we've got jewelers, we've got lawyers, we've got teachers, we've got doctors in this place. And what we're called to do is rise up through the various social capitals, the social, the political, the art, the culture, the economics, the religion, the education, the science and the tech. Just like Daniel, use our influence to benefit and renew the city, not for ourselves or not for Christianity, but for the city. You see, there's a different way of thinking about this. It's not about us and getting our place back that we lost. It's not about us as surviving. This is about us blessing the world. And through that, society will see what we're doing. They'll see that our words match our deeds, that our faith isn't incompatible with their society, that we're honest and upright, and that our direction is good. And they won't and they can't possibly hate us. And in the end, they'll prefer the direction that we're going in, and they'll want a piece of it. And the world will be a better place. What does this look like individually for us, this play? Just like Daniel, what would it look like for us to live this out? Well, the thing you need, if we're going to live out this play, is you need a kingdom vision for your job and for your city. And if after deep thinking and reflection you can't find that, maybe it's time to think about changing jobs. So, we're going to do an activity from Adam Leipzig. And what I want you to do is I want you to think about who you are, what your job is, who you do it for, what they want and what they need, and how does God's kingdom come as a result? So it should be pretty simple. If you've got your piece of paper in front of you, I want you to write down your name. You can do that. I know people know their name. It's very exciting. I want you to write down your job. This is the title. This is the official title. Often when we introduce ourselves, don't we? We say, hello, my name is James and I'm the youth and young adults worker at Norton Summit Baptist Church. That's the title. Often that title shuts down a conversation because people go, oh yeah, what's that? Right? That's not your job. Right, here we go. Then what I want you to write down is who you do that for. Who do you do this job for? Who are the people that access your services? Now, if you're retired, I want you to think about some of the places that you're probably volunteering in. Maybe your full-time occupation since you have retired is grandmother or grandfather. Or maybe your garden has become your chief place of work. That's okay too. What's your name? What's your job? Who do you do it for? Then the question is, what do they want or need? What do those people want or need from you? Right. Now, often what we do, Adam Lepsig will say, we introduce ourselves as, hello, my name is James and I'm the youth and young adults worker. What I'd encourage you to do is to think about the what they do or they want as the thing that you actually do. So here's how I would say it. Hello, my name is James and I bring hope to young people. Do you see how that's different? Hello, my name is Shane. And through the jewelry that I make, I remind people of the love and the commitment that they have for one another, of the special moments that they have for one another. So do you see that want or that need, that space, that becomes your kingdom vision? So the way I would write that down in that last question, how does God's kingdom come as a result of that? I would say, my name is James, putting it all together, and I bring hope, that's the what they want or they need, for young people. That's who do I do it for. It's a quick exercise to help you think about this. It's not perfect, and there's a way to think about it. That often creates deep pondering. But I want you to think about some of those things that you do and how you do them and why you do them. And the natural question is, in that space, how are you serving the city? This is an activity that maybe some of you will be able to complete over this period of time, and maybe it'll get you thinking and it'll be the beginning of something more. That's okay. You know, Christians have a great history. Followers of Jesus have a great history of serving the city in all of those different various spaces. I'm going to give you one story today. We're an arty church, so I thought I would give you an arty story. Some of you might know the story of Fred Rogers. Fred Rogers in the States, when I was there, was someone that people couldn't stop talking about. And I had never encountered who this person was, and they just kept talking about Mr. Rogers. Oh, you've got to know who Mr. Rogers is. I grew up with Mr. Rogers. And I was like, how can everyone know who Mr. Rogers is? Who is this person? Right? Mr. Rogers, for those of you who don't know, was a childhood TV person and ran a television show called Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood. And for something like 40 years, he was the person that young people would watch in the morning as preschoolers. And they would come home to afternoon. And one of the things that most people don't know about Mr. Rogers was that he was a Presbyterian minister. And what he did was he said, there are young people and they're not being effectively communicated to. And they're not learning. And what we need to do is we need to teach them and we need to treat them as human beings because they have this deep capacity to learn and know. And he wrestled with the networking and said, I want to make a show for young people that speaks to kids, for kids, as if the grown-ups are not even there. And I'm going to treat them like they're adults. And so for 40 years, this was his mission. What he wanted to do was teach everyone in a space of racial division in America, in a time where there was deep divisions in terms of those kind of things, what it looks like to live in a neighborhood together. And so his question that he asked every single time is, won't you be my neighbor? Do you hear that question? Won't you be my neighbor? Mr. Rogers' neighborhood? What is he doing here? He's inviting people in to a space where people encounter him, encounter Jesus through him, and encounter the type of life and values that Jesus aspired to. And so people would come up to Mr. Rogers years and years and years later, and they would ask him for life advice, and he would always ask if he could pray for them, and no one ever said no. It's this kind of thing where Mr. Rogers was living out his life, living out his kingdom vision in a space of great public space, but also in a space that was secular. He worked out of New York, if I'm not mistaken, and so it was this space where he couldn't necessarily come out and talk about Jesus publicly in his television program, but every episode whispered Jesus' name. Won't you be my neighbor? Some questions for you to think about individually before I move on. How much time do I have that's spent with people who don't follow Jesus? What does that look like? How many of my friends are people of faith? How many of my friends aren't people of faith? What could I do to change this? Where do my kids go to school, and why did I make that decision? Okay. Let's move on. Let's talk about the play for the church and the local community. What's the play? When you get a Daniel vision, when you get this vision of working for and being for the community, you get on about your local community and for its good, and you want to be for that community. What would that look like for Norton Summit? What would that look like for our family here to be in the community and for the community we find ourselves in? We've got a footy club. We've got a tennis club. We've got the local pub. We've got the show coming up. We've got Imagine Your Adler. What are the things that we're doing to being in and for this community? I want to ask a question. How do you feel about the show coming up? Is this something you're looking forward to, this idea that we've got, we're going to put this service on in the UA, the show? How are you feeling about that? Is that something you're going, yes, that's a great idea, I can't wait? Is this something you're a bit worried about? How can we own all of that as a community? These are the spaces that we can actually make change in. God isn't calling us to go off far-flung into the fields of Africa to make disciples. God is... The Great Commission, as you go, the better translation of Matthew 28 is when it says go and make disciples is in the going or as you go. It's not about going off to some far-flung place, but rather it's in the places and spaces that you inhabit and are right now. What would it look like to make disciples? These are the spaces in our local community that we can make change. What if we had a group that went, you know what? I'm going to adopt that football club as my own. I'm going to make sure that young blokes there and young ladies that love that sport meet Jesus. I'm going to make sure that they know what it looks like to be well-rounded human beings. I'm going to be that mentor and that person for them. What would that look like? I've got some mates down at Ironbank Football Club, and a couple of years ago, what they decided was that that was a space that they wanted to inhabit and change for the good. It was a pretty kind of sad club, I think most people would agree. It hadn't won a premiership for a very long time. It was barely getting by, and some of the coaches resorted to YouTube videos for their pep talk beforehand on a tiny little screen, and they'd say, all right, everyone, huddle around. Here's the thing, and they'd hand it off, and off they go. All right, good. Everyone knows what that means, and off, no one would know. Be like a video about planes in World War II or something like that. I am not kidding you. Right. And as a church, I had a couple of mates that said, what would it look like if we adopted that place? And so we said, yep, what a great idea. And so led by a bloke called Daniel, what we did was we went into that community. We got a bunch of players to start playing with them. And what we did was we invited the people who weren't necessarily football players to be the runners and the coaches and the physicians in that place. And we invited them into that space. And they were really excited because they got an influx of a whole bunch of new people who played tennis and played football and who liked like all of a sudden there was this life and this vitality. And we said, what would it look like to head there as a church on Sunday for games? And so after church, we'd all bail up to the games and watch everyone play. What would it look like to mix with these people? What would it look like after the games on a Saturday night to go to Prezzies and start to be in that space for the good of that club? Iron Bank Football Club has not won a premiership for a very long time. This year, after a couple of years, they won the A-grade premiership. And it was because there was a group of people in that space that went there and said, we're going to make a difference there. Granted, it was Division 2. Just thought I'd throw that out there for those of us who are Uraidla fans. It was Division 2, all right? But it's a start of something. And this is the exciting thing. The club president said, I have never played in a club that has such life and such vitality, and I have never had so much fun playing football than I have in the last couple of years with the bunch of blokes that have come and rocked up here and all of a sudden made our club full of life again. What would it look like for us as a church to find some spaces in our local community and go, we're going to be for that place. We are going to be Jesus' hands and feet in that place for the good of that place. What's the play? I want to finish off today by just talking about the reality that when we execute this play, this Daniel play, there is a cost. I want to be honest about that. For Daniel, his life was full of testing and persecution. There was trials and a lot of really difficult stuff that he had to go through. Not just a young man, but also in his life. He faced death a number of times and chose to follow God in that space. He was thrown into a lion's den and expected to die. They hadn't been fed. His friends were thrown into a fiery furnace. He was accused of doing wrongdoing. He became an enemy of the city several times. The question is, is it worth executing that play? What's the cost? Is it worth it? Now, there's a second cost. There's a change that happens. When you start to become for the city, when you execute this play, you've got to realize that doing this may make you unrecognizable to your old clan. Next week, we're going to look at what happens when the exiles come back. But I want to give you a quick little teaser. This group from Babylon come back. They had all sorts of trouble reintegrating. And for the people that had stayed, they found that they looked different, they sounded different, and there was a lot of trouble in trying to actually reconcile who they were and who they had become. David Kinnaman, in a book called You Lost Me, says that one of the top reasons that young followers of Jesus leave the church is that in their efforts to live in the city and love the city, they become unrecognizable to their clan back in their homeland. There is no place for them. There's no space for them in church on Sunday. Isn't that interesting? I've got three mates who are evolutionary biologists, and they have lost faith. And the reason they have lost faith is not because of what they studied. In fact, they're actually well integrated, very holistic people in terms of their faith and life and what they do. But they lost faith because their community had no place for them. Their church community had no place for them. Isn't that sad? Just want to let you know, as you head out into the fringe, as you start to serve the city in this place, you'll look different. You'll sound different. You'll maybe talk different. You'll find that those religious Christian easy phrases don't really cut mustard anymore, and you can't really use them. And maybe, is it possible that you'll get rejected by the religious crew who want to keep the things the way they were? No, I think actually at Norton Summit we're really good at this. But the question I want to keep poking and prodding, how do we make space for that here? The idea that we're this artisans, we're the working class, we're going out into this space. How do we make space for Sunday to be a place where we come back and it can be a space of gathering that welcomes us, that understands the diverse spaces that we go into and the challenges and the difficulties of what it looks like to be in those places. How can we make more space? There's two questions left on your sheet. And I want to encourage you, in your fellowship time, I encourage you today to ask those two questions. It's great to catch up. But Karen and I have just been wrestling with, what does that look like to use that space just a little bit more intentionally? Can I encourage you today just to find someone? Maybe it's your spouse, maybe it's someone else you're asking. Just ask them, what's the hardest thing about being a follower of Jesus in that space that you work in? Because I know that's hard for a lot of you guys. I know there are difficult kind of spaces and nuances and compromises that you navigate each and every day because we live in this city. The second question there, what does it look like to have that job and that vocation in this church space? And what's difficult about that? What is it that you wish that our church knew about the challenges of doing that out there? And how do we go at that? What's the play? Let's send ourselves into the city and let's find a way to make space here for the reality that the world is going to change them and that we're going to change the church in the process. We've got a lot of work to do. It's exciting. Oh, this vision is so good. And God's not finished that. What's the play? Let's live in the city for God. Let me pray. Father God, Lord, we wrestle with the challenge of what it looks like to be your people in a place where we are not a majority, where we are a minority. We wrestle with the difficulty of being your people in a workspace where it is not always easy to follow you. Lord, would you give us wisdom and discernment about how to navigate that? Would you open our eyes to see how it is that we can serve the city for your good? Would you bless us and give us the strength and fortitude to be in that space in spite of the difficulties that we face? Lord, would you give us clarity about what it is that we do and why we do it? And would you help us to capture your kingdom vision for our lives? Amen. Just want to throw it out there. At the end of the service, I'll be down the front and there'll be someone else from the prayer team down here this morning. We'd love to pray for you if you're wrestling with some of those questions or if you have any other prayer needs. So I'd really encourage you just to come and spend some time with us and pray. Thanks. I'll hand back to Jesse and the team.